Comienza Conversaciones que Transforman, el podcast de Grupo Argos para conocer y profundizar en los temas que están transformando nuestra realidad en compañía de los protagonistas que lo hacen posible.
Hello, everybody. This is Iván Trujillo speaking. It is my great pleasure to welcome you to Conversaciones que Transforman, our corporate podcast where we welcome the thoughts and opinions of leaders and experts on several matters. Today, I would like to give a warm welcome to a very special guest. His name is Steve Cadigan. Steve is the former vice president of LinkedIn, the popular professional social network. He has led the development of LinkedIn's legendary company culture and was at the helm of the talent function for its period of the highest growth and through their IPO. Steve is also a founder of Cadigan Talent Ventures. He is currently one of Silicon Valley's top talent gurus. He has also helped architect the culture of LinkedIn and many other incredible organizations worldwide. He has also worked in HR for more than 30 years in global roles within 6 different industries in 3 different countries. Steve continues to write, deliver keynote speeches, hold workshops, and advise organizations around the world on how to succeed in the digital economy. Well, we're really happy and excited to have you here with us today in our corporate podcast. Welcome, Steve.
Iván, so great to be here. Thank you for inviting me, and I look forward to this conversation very much.
Thank you. So, Steve, I would like to ask you a little bit about yourself. Why don't you tell us about your story, your background? How did you end up working for human resources in LinkedIn?
You know, I feel very lucky, Iván, that I discovered what I am currently doing at a very early age, and I think that's very rare. I finished up my university days and knowing that I really love sports. And I played on 3 teams in my university. I was a big baseball, basketball, and I played tennis as well. And I loved that time. And what I discovered about 1 year into the working world was this whole world of recruiting. I was asked by the company I was working for, would I consider doing a job hiring people? And as I started to do that role, I realized that everything I loved about sports is everything that human resource can offer, is helping choose the right people for a team, helping determine which players play best with which coaches or which managers, who performs best in what environments. And so over the course of the next few years and over the course of my career, I've been able to really fall in love with this profession. And it has, if you like sports and you like to see how people handle different situations and try to organize and motivate and coach to get the best result, to me, there's no greater art form, Iván, than the art form of helping people achieve something great together. So that's how I discovered it. It was just by accident. I didn't study that in school. I was a history major. I was a European history major. None of the family members in my life, my parents, my aunts, my uncles, nobody was in the world of business. Everyone was in education or social services or nonprofits. So I think even today, my parents look at me and say, where did we go wrong with this boy? but that's my story. That's how I got into human resources.
That's great. So what a beautiful accident, we could say. Steve, where are you right now professionally? And where are you heading? Why don't you tell us, where are you right now in terms of profession and where are you heading right now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Iván. And I think it's a great way of thinking about careers, which is more like a journey than a straight line. And I think increasingly in this world of work where we have so many more choices, we have so many more opportunities that we can see thanks to the internet, thanks to the transparency that we see out there, that we can explore new things. Well, for the last 8 years of my working life, I've been on my own and I advise organizations, I advise individuals. I sit on the board of directors for 3 organizations. One of them is in construction, another one is in human resources field, and another one is in mobile payments and cryptocurrency. So for me, it's a great place because I get to meet in lots of different people in different industries in different parts of the world, and it really gives me a good laboratory to learn and continue to try to make a difference and to be around people who are excited to try to build a better future in lots of different ways. And my strength during my professional working years when I was inside organizations was really on the human domain, working with culture, how to improve the culture and how to build a great culture, how to improve leadership, how to improve our recruiting. And I just did it for one company. And today I get to do it for many, many at the same time. And so that's what I'm up to. And you and I were talking a few days ago, and you know that the most exciting thing for me that I'm working on right now is I just finished a book on the future of work called Workquake, and it is available now. And so I'm working on a big public relations campaign, which I hope will bring me to many of the locations where you have team members at Group Argos, and also be able to share some more what I think are fresh ideas around how we can reframe what a career means, how we can reframe what leadership means today, and how we can build organizations that really consider the fact that we're living in and working in a very different world that has changed a lot. And we have yet to build a good model for the future of work that feels satisfying and motivational. So that's where I'm at.
That's amazing, Steve. Thanks for sharing. Can't wait to read your book, huh? So when is it going to be in the market?
It is up now on I don't know if it ships globally yet, but it's available for sale at my publisher in the US called Amplify. And it's also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other online bookstores, but it won't ship until August. So I'm doing get everyone excited about it. And then when it ships, you want to try to get people to buy it as soon as possible. So yeah, later summer, early fall, it's going to hit the market.
That's great. Congrats. It's your first book, right?
That's right. That's right.
So, Steve, how was it working in LinkedIn? Such a wonderful company. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I'll tell you what, Ivan. For me, the LinkedIn adventure was both exciting, shocking, surprise, wonderful, crazy, stressful. It was so many things. And to appreciate that, you have to appreciate the story that I had before I went to LinkedIn. Most of my working life, I worked in big companies. And when you work in many big companies, you are fixing what somebody made before you. You are making it more current. You're making it more relevant for the now and for the future. And you're trying to tune a machine that's been built already. You're not building something from nothing. And what was very different for me at LinkedIn was to be given the chance to join that company when it was very young. It was only about 4 years old. It had about 400 people. It was still very, very new and it was growing quickly. We didn't have a whole lot of revenue, but we had some good investors and a good idea. And there was no human resource organization plan, hardly at all. Like they weren't really clear, how do we really pay people? Do we have a compensation system? Do we do performance management? Do we not? Do we do reviews? What is the organization structure? Even things like, Ivan, like how many levels should we have? Should we have vice president and a senior vice president and an executive vice president, or should we just have a vice president? Should we have a manager, senior manager, a junior manager, associate manager, or just manager? So we started from, I walked in the door and I'd never done that before.
Yeah, working from scratch.
Yeah, exactly. Working from scratch. And I thought, and this was a big mistake on my part, I thought that was going to be easy. It's not easy. Building, especially if you've never done, I'd never built a company from nothing. Now, I'd been in big companies, and this is one of the, we can talk more about this later in the show, but sadly, I believe many of us have learned more from leadership how not to do it than how to do it, because we've not had great leaders, and they're sadly more rare than they are common. So I'd seen lots of mistakes. I made some mistakes in my career, and I said, wow, this is a chance. I could build something better. Interestingly, Ivan, most of the executives felt the same way I did. We wanted to build something different. We were, I would call it big company refugees. We saw, we didn't want to have bureaucracy. We didn't want to have slow decision making. We didn't want to have ivory tower executives. We want to have everyone feeling like their access to information was simple, that we wanted to, have methods so that people felt really motivated. And we didn't have was examples of how to do that. We had examples how not to do it. So it was an experiment. And the best part was I had my ex-Google, I had my ex-Microsoft, I had my ex-Yahoo people, I had my ex-Intel and Oracle and ex-Cisco. And everyone had some things they liked, but a lot of things they didn't like. And so I walked in the door and I said, okay, well, let's build this in the way that we want to. And that took a while for us to figure out, because we knew more what we didn't want than what we did want. So it was a lot of trial and error in the early days, for sure. Yeah.
But Steve, if you were, for instance, to describe the culture at LinkedIn at those times, what did it look like?
Okay, so this, you know, during my time there, this is probably the most important subject for anyone on the executive team will tell you. Our culture, we turned into, and I'd never seen this before, even though I've been into talent world for 30 years before LinkedIn, I'd never seen culture become a competitive advantage. Like the reason that you thrive. And we hear about it, we hear stories about it, but I'd never felt that before. I worked in companies where everyone said, oh, the culture's important, but I never really seen it come to life in a way that was so powerful. So I want you to imagine that you're in my shoes. It's 2009, we're joining LinkedIn, and nobody's heard of the company at that point. Nobody, very few people. And so I'm trying to build a company in the shadow of Google buildings. They're going everywhere. And Google is sexy. They pay more. They have beautiful buildings. They have amazing free meals and sushi chefs and childcare centers. And it's sexy, sexy, sexy. And we are the old professional boring network that has no good brand. I cannot pay what Google can pay. Then Facebook does the same thing. Then Apple does the same thing. And so what it forced us to do, Yvonne, was to say, if we want to hire people so that they come here instead of going to those companies, if we want to hire people from those companies, what do we have? We can't pay more. We can't have beautiful buildings because they make more money in a day than we make in a year. How are we going to do that? And what we realized was we could control something that costs nothing. We could create the best job, the best experience, the best career enriching growth that anyone has ever had. That was the decision we made, number one. Like, to build a great culture really costs nothing, okay? You can talk about perks and, you know, oh, beautiful ping pong tables and we have beer on Friday and we go on trips. Those are perks. That's not culture, right? In Silicon Valley, there's a lot of people drunk on the perks. Like, oh, we have to have free food and sodas and drinks and this and that. That's not, I think, that's like what I call a sugar high. It tastes good right away, but after a while it wears off and then you say, well, what am I? I still have a bad boss and a bad company. So what we said was, Yvonne, you join our company, it will be the best career adventure of your life. And we promise you that. And if you want to be a CEO of a startup in a few years, if you want to take my job, if you want to grow to somewhere different, we will help you on your journey. And so that's what we did. And the next thing that we did, and this was a big cultural moment, is we said, what assets do we have that the other companies where people can go work don't have? And we had to get very clear, because in Silicon Valley, it is what I call a career candy store. You can go anywhere and there's lots of choice. So you have to be very clear on why someone should come work for you and who is the right person. What we said was, we got very, very focused, and this took a while for us to understand the problem that we're solving in our business. Helping people find their dream jobs. That is a better problem to solve than if you go to Facebook and help people learn how to be distracted and pay attention to a false reality, like a world that is not really true. Or you can go to Google and be engineer number 7,000 and fix the trophies of the people who worked before you, but not work on anything innovative. Like, we're building something here for your children. We're helping build a great future of work. Do you want to solve that problem? And those two things, come here for a great career and solve a problem that's worth solving, that's better than anything Twitter, Facebook, Apple, anything they were doing. We really believe that, and I still think they do today. That helped us be able to get clear on who we are, you know? And here's another thing, Yvonne, that was very interesting for me during that adventure was, you know, when you're joining a company that's a little bit older, it's like if you are dating someone and you're 40, the person knows who they are. They're sort of, hopefully they know by 40 who they are. When you're joining an organization that is a teenager, they don't know who they are. And they can grow and they can learn and they can be different. So we had ways that we could grow, and that was so powerful. We could, you know, make big decisions and try new things. But the culture being a competitive advantage, I've always heard, as I said, I always heard people talk about, oh, culture's important. And when we got clear on that, Ivan, then we were able to hire faster, hire better. And then we got, the culture was so good, good people came to us. We didn't have to find them as much. They said, I want to join your team. And we said, wow, you have an amazing background. Really? You want to work for us? They go, yes, I want to work with you. So, and then it just got better and better. Yeah.
So Steve, you have worked for almost 30 years in human talent or human resources. What has been the main learning you've had regarding leadership?
Oh boy, I can only come up with one. Can I give you a few?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think that the key to great leadership for me is, you know, investing in understanding the journey of the people that you're managing. So, and how you know if you have a good leader that you are working for is when you interview, are they only asking questions about how qualified you are? Because if they're only asking questions like, can you do the job? Do you have the experience? Do you have the degree? Have you been working in similar roles? What they're really looking at is, are you good for them? Okay. They're not telling you, is this experience good for you? And is the company good for you? And if you have a leader that's saying, tell me about your journey. I want to make sure that when you come here and work here, that this is a good experience to get you on your journey where you want to go, wherever that is. So now they're asking questions about you. If they ask questions about the job, they're really asking questions to meet their needs. And you want a leader that's going to meet your needs. And in this world that's changing quickly, in a world where people have a lot of choice, in a world like right now, we're in the pandemic, and a lot of people have a lot of challenges at home that are new, that didn't have before, whether it's education for children or care for young people or elderly people or people who have immune problems or, you know, whatever, access to healthcare, whatever that is, whether there's, you know, challenges in society, like, we have got to know where our people are more than ever. And that, to me, over the course of my career, when I see leaders that are thinking about their employee first, not thinking about what the employee does for me, but what they can do for the employee, that's a very powerful thing. And Ivan, a number of years ago, I wrote an article, and it's very punchy. On one level, it's very simple, but it's very powerful. And the article was called Two Words That Matter for a Leader. And it was Buenos Dias, good morning.
Buenos Dias.
Those are the two words. And I will tell you, I have mediated thousands of disputes between an employee and a manager for many, many years. Many, too many to count. And this is how many of those stories go. You know, my manager, blah, 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 blah. My manager, blah, blah, blah. They don't do this. They don't do that. And then they say at the end of all, they say, and they don't even say good morning to me. They don't even say. And so is it good morning? Is that really what it? No, that's not it. What it really is do you recognize me? Do you acknowledge my humanity? Do you respect me? And if you just show up and you walk by your team, you don't even say anything, well, you've made a statement that you are more important than they are. And so that's sort of, yeah, it's simple, right? It's simple, but it happens more than you believe.
It's empathy, being a kind person, being a good person at the end of the day. It's not rocket science.
That's right. That's right. And sadly, a lot of us were trained that we have to be tough to be respected. We have to be cold and impersonal. Don't want to be friends with your employees. And that is true. There is some professional distance is important in a working relationship, you know, and that is a big step for me. When I'm looking at a leader, are they ready for more? One of the first questions I ask is, can they lead from respect or do they have to lead through friendship? And if the younger, earlier in career leaders usually want people to like them. And when you get older, you realize that's impossible. I'm not going to get everyone to like me. And by the way, if they respect me, they will stay more. They will do more. And they need to know that I care about them. It doesn't mean I have to be their friend, but I have to have a professional distance because I have to have hard conversations to make you better sometimes. And that is necessary. So that's just another, you know, lesson I picked up over the years.
Steve, speak about the future, the trends. We know that you're recognized by focusing on understanding the future of work. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the trends that are shaping the future and how can we be prepared to face that evolving pace we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, and what a time in our lives to be asking that question and thinking about this. I mean, I don't have to tell everyone who's listening right now that this has been the craziest year of all of our lives in so many ways. And I think that when I look at the future, I don't think things will continue to be this crazy, but I think that success and satisfaction and achievement for all of us is going to result in the world of work from a recognition that we have to be prepared for the unexpected, that we need to, the more we can learn and grow and respond as individuals, as professionals, and as organizations, the more likely that we're going to be able to face an uncertain and unpredictable future. There's fewer things that we control. This is the most unsatisfying time to be a human being because there's so many things we don't control. We have less control of our health. We have less control over where we can spend our time right now. We have less certainty around what's happening to our business and our customers and our supply chain. There's too many things that aren't so. We have less certainty around the education of our children and our family members. That's not satisfying. That's scary. And as human beings right now, when you have little information, we tend to assume the worst because we are survival animals. We are here and we are built to survive. So when we don't have information, that causes us to be anxiety. That's why we see cases of anxiety rising. So when I think of the future of work, I see a world where, you know, the super strength is your ability to learn. I get asked this so many times, but in the press, in the media, television, Steve, tell us the most important skill for the future. And my answer is pretty simple, and it may be unsatisfying for some people. I said, the most important skill for the future is the skill of learning fast and applying new things.
It relates to adaptability also, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, you know, when I work with organizations around the world and what I hear from the leaders is the people I want are people who can adapt, the people who are comfortable learning new things. And so the more people you have in your organization that can learn quickly, the faster you can adapt. And we know by looking at all the unicorns out there, by looking at all the industry disruptors that are happening, they're doing something really interesting. And a company that is very fascinating to me, not only because it's local here, but because it's taking on a huge, powerful, entrenched business is the automobile industry. And when I look at what Tesla's doing and how fast they're innovating, how fast they're accelerating their growth, and how valuable investors think they are compared to all their peers that have been around, in many cases, 100 years, and they're selling more, they're making a little more profit than Tesla, but all the investors are betting on Tesla because they can bet. They're betting on the adaptability. They're betting on their ability to change. They're betting on the culture being one that they can learn new things. And I think that's kind of the future, you know, is playing for preparing to grow and change as individuals and organizations. That's, you know, at a very high level, that's how I see it.
Steve, I would like to ask you, what's a company you really admire in terms of talent management or culture? Any company comes up to your mind and why?
There are a few companies in different ways that are really interesting to me. There's a, you know, I mentioned the other day to somebody, a company that I've been following because I really like music a lot. And there's this company in Sweden, it's Spotify. And they a relatively young company. The business is relatively new. And we all know, thanks to Apple, you know, the music industry was disrupted. And Napster, I don't know if you were an early adopter of Napster. I definitely was probably breaking the law using Napster before it was shut down. But I rediscovered my love for music, and it just rekindled for me. It brought me back to something that was important in my life. And when I look at Spotify and what they're doing, they're intentionally moving people around in their organization. They're creating an adaptable environment. They're making their people, through how they design their organization, to adapt regularly to new things. And that gets me really excited. And you just to look at how they're doing it, I think, you know, there's an organization, a big multinational headquartered in the UK called Unilever, which is a big, huge consumer goods company. And it's amazing. And they care so much. They're so concerned about setting their employees up for success, that they have a whole organization focused right now on eliminating distraction for their employees. And they've done a lot of studies. They're always like, what does our perfect employee look like? And what does our perfect team look like? And they're obsessed with this. And they have hundreds of people in their learning organization today. And they're not focused on building some new leadership competency. They're not focused on some new technical skill or some programming language. Their focus, interestingly enough, is on helping eliminate distraction for their people. That's what they're focused on. And it's counterintuitive. So you think in this technological world, oh, for us to be great, we need to have more systems and tools and processes and digital transformation. Now, here's a company that is incredibly successful with great track record, great leadership. And they're saying, we need to help people learn how to focus on fewer things and be more successful. And isn't that interesting? So those are some of the companies that I'm looking at. And I mean, there's many, many small companies that people have never heard of. But we're seeing more experiments right now in organizations to try new things because maybe they're having a harder time attracting people, or maybe they're, you know, wanting to try a new approach so that they can, you know, grow faster than their competition. And also the pandemic is obviously forcing a lot of organizations to try new things relative to where and how people work, whether it should be hybrid at home or what. So yeah, it's an interesting time. But there, you know, I always say, and this is particularly true for big businesses, you know, I was in a conference a few weeks ago, and the planners of the conference for a very, very big company were saying, they said to me, and this is a fun conversation for me, and I have it frequently, and I get satisfaction out of it. So bear with me on this one, because I'm going to try to tell this in a meaningful way. So I'm about to speak to the leadership team of a very large organization. And they say, what's important to you? They said, we want you to tell us what big companies like us are doing. And I said, why? And they said, because we want to learn from companies like us. And I said, but why do you want to learn from big companies like us? So you can be just like big companies like you? And they looked at me like they didn't understand the question. And that's when I brought up Tesla. I said, do you want to be like Tesla, or do you want to be another automobile company? So if you want to be like Tesla, what's the way to do that? Is the way to do that to look at other companies like yourself in the automobile industry? Because Tesla built that company with non-automobile industry people. They saw the problem differently. So there is goodness in benchmarking other people like you, but I think there is greatness in looking at someone completely different than you. So let's take a look at another sector that's shockingly had to go through massive change, and I don't know that they're going to survive. That's banking, traditional banks. You and I both know, you know, when's the last time you went to a bank, Yvonne, or when's the last time you did banking on your phone, right? What happened is the bank became a phone. The bank's on your phone. You don't need to go to a branch. And so what happened with banking was 20 years ago, all the consultants told the bank, or 30 years ago, the consultant said, you need to put all your data in India because it's really cheap over there. So put all your data over there. And now the banks are realizing that the consumer, their customers, are using their phone to do the banking. What do banks know about phones? Nothing. Where's all the data that's on the phones that the banking customers are using? It's in India. So look at the problem they have. Now they've been outflanked. So if I'm a bank and they come to Steve Cadigan and say, hey, can you give us a talk about what other banks are doing? You're wasting your time. Go hire somebody else. I don't want to do that. You need to look outside. And that is why, you know, I believe, Yvonne, that's why you invited me here today, so that I can shake it up a little bit. You know, we did this all the time at LinkedIn, exactly what you're doing. We brought in speakers from the outside. I want a promise from you that when the world is safe, that I get to visit you in person and we tour around and we get to go. But I would love to do that. And I miss that very much as an extrovert. But this is it. You know, I think, and this is part of human nature, we get comfortable and we want things to not change and we want stability, but we're starting to realize, you know, it's just like in a marriage. You know, you want a partner who's going to be with you and who's going to be loyal, but you also want a little bit of crazy and unexpected too. You know, it's like, I want a little bit of spontaneity and a little bit of, you know, wildness, but I don't want you to leave. I want you to stay. I want you to love me no matter what. And so in business, I think we're facing the same challenge where it's uncomfortable, but if you really want to innovate, look to the innovators. Don't look to the people that look like you, right?
Steve, during these COVID times, what's the new normal looking like for companies? Do you foresee any new normal coming in? After the worst of the pandemic is passing by, at least in the US, what's it looking like for companies right now?
Yeah, I know. I don't see that we're going to return to anything like we were before. I do think that we're going to have less and less disruption. We're already seeing that here in California from the pandemic. You know, I understand, you know, every country is in a different place relative to vaccinations, but I don't think we're close. And I'm okay with that. And I think the worst mistake any company or leader can make today is expect things are going to be like they were soon. We all want it. I have less things to worry about. I want more things known. We just passed a rule here in California. Soon we're not going to have to wear masks if you've had the vaccination. That's great. But then it's like, how do you know? Is someone going to get a tattoo? Like, how do you know? Is someone going to have a special glasses? We know they have vaccination or they have special haircut. I don't understand how that's going to work. But I think, you know, the best expression I've heard about the new normal is never normal. And I like that because it's a reminder that when people say what's the new normal, that means the new place where things are not going to be crazy. And I think we need to appreciate the new normal is never normal, which means we're not going to have as much predictability as we had before. So we need to be mindful of where everyone else is. We need to be understanding and learning about the challenges our colleagues are facing. We need to hire a team that, you know, is highly adaptable. And I think that's where we're going. I think most people that I speak to feel it's some combination of a hybrid. And even the biggest companies I'm talking to that I thought would never change, or they would say, everyone's coming back, are saying, no, we're really worried about our wellness of our people. And we feel if we bring everyone back, that's going to have a very, very bad outcome. And that's okay. But I look at it this way, Ivan. I say that we are in an age of experimentation. And that's a good thing. You know, we are going to have to try. We're going to have to talk to our employees more. Does this work? Are you okay with that? Do you feel you're most productive when you're at home 2 days a week and in the office 3 days a week? And what days and what hours? And there are two companies that I've come across just in the last month whose sole business product is software that maps where everyone on a team is. So that, you know, if we're on the same team, Yvonne, you and I can agree, okay, on Tuesdays, we're going to be in the office in Medellin, okay, at this time from 12 to 3. And so since I know you're going to be there, you know I'm going to be there, I'm going to be in the same floor and the same cubicle next to you so we can collaborate. Yeah, so that there's getting to be some technology to help us organize new ways of working.
Right now at Grupo Argos, you know, everybody's working from home. So I have a question, like while working from home right now, how do we replace those normal interactions we had while we were working together at the offices? Like this will certainly shape the culture of companies towards the upcoming days. So in that sense, do you believe in fully remote work environment? At our company, at Grupo Argos, we're preparing for a hybrid model, if you could call it like that, to return to our office. We will see how it works. This is new to everybody, but I would love to hear your opinions and thoughts around this topic.
Yeah, and I'm just like you, Ivan. I'm asking everyone who I will listen to me to help me understand how they're thinking about this too, because I'm curious and I'm learning a lot as we go through this. The biggest fear that I have right now is exactly what you were talking about. The fear is that human nature is such that when we feel safe, we feel most comfortable being honest, okay? And those moments tend to happen in informal environments, having a coffee, going to lunch, going to dinner, walking across the hallway and bumping into someone, hey, how's it going? And it's a friendly interaction. Those moments are when people's guards are down, they're comfortable. That's when someone's going to say, hey, I didn't understand what you said in that meeting. What did you mean? Or are you upset at me? I noticed you were really frustrated in an email you sent me yesterday. Or, hey, I've been thinking of this idea. What do you think if we try this? those informal inspiration collisions that we had are gone. Most interactions, if you're from home, are, hey, let's set up a meeting and get on a call, get on a Zoom, get on a Microsoft Team, get on a, you know, Google Hangout, get on a GoToWebinar, whatever it is. That's formal. We set it up. And I think we have to, so how do we deal with that? Well, nobody knows for sure, but what we do know is we have to try to build those safe, informal moments. So what I see some organizations try is like video games. So we're going to have the communications team's going to play finance this week in a multiplayer game. And we're just going to have fun. We're going to get in the chat box and we're going to trash talk each other. We're going to have fun. We're going to play a game. Or we're going to play FIFA. You're going to be Argentina and we're going to be Colombia. We're going to have play this game. And so they're creating those informal moments, or they're going around and saying they're matching randomly, matching people in the organization to have an informal virtual coffee. And so they're trying to find through experimentation ways for those informal moments to happen. And informal moments, for me, the best way for any of the listeners who have children is to think about when you're with your child in at home and you say, I need to talk to you. Is the child ready for a conversation, or they're like, uh-oh, something's coming, I'm in trouble. You know? Yeah, let's have a talk, right? And that's not comfortable. But if you're with your child and you're driving to school, or you're driving to a party, or you're driving to a football match, then your child is looking ahead. They're not looking at you. There's nothing, there's no agenda. We're just together in a safe space. They say, hey, daddy, the teacher said something that made me afraid today, or I was bullied in school, or I don't think I did so good in a test and I'm afraid you're going to be upset with me. Those moments just went away. And so it's going to have to take some creativity from us as leaders and as coworkers and professionals to find ways to replace that, those moments. And that, when I think about what's next and what occupies most of my thinking, it's those informal moments. Like, how are we going to replace those right now?
Thank you, Steve. So, Steve, we have so many more questions, but we're running out of time right now, sadly. But this has been such an amazing conversation with you. Thank you for sharing so much knowledge and experience with us. We definitely look forward to having you again sometime soon. And you're more than welcome to come to our offices once we get to this new normality, Steve. You know how grateful we are for having you in here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for letting me share and being so generous with your questions and your openness. And I've become a fan of your organization and the people that I've met. So thank you. And I do look forward very much to future interactions in the near future.
Very honored again and grateful to have you in Conversaciones que Transforman. We hope to see you and hear you soon again. Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Hasta este momento, Conversaciones que Transforman, el podcast de Grupo Argos para conocer y profundizar en los temas que están transformando nuestra realidad en compañía de los protagonistas que lo hacen posible. Nos escuchamos en la próxima emisión.